Good morning again. My name is Dean Behrens, and this is my first Sunday as the lead pastor of this church, Christ Church Mission. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Oh, yeah, those of you that are new, if this is your first time, this is kind of a big day for you to be here, I guess. Big day for me, at least. So I want to say a little bit about that before I jump into the text for this morning. First, I'm super thankful for Nick. Just like you, I'm just really grateful for him. He has done this transition over the last 5 weeks, this baton pass, really, really well. I'm sure that, I mean, no doubt at times it was difficult for him, but he's just been like mature and thoughtful and strategic, like all the way up until the end. He's actually even going to be at the Alpha party this week because I'm still finishing up Alpha with my group over in Overland Park. So he's going strong all the way to the end, and I really respect and commend him for that. I'm really grateful for him. Additionally, Nick has like built something here that I believe that I could not have built. Like, I really am grateful for the 2 years plus that he has given to this community. He has built a church culture that is really impressive and beautiful and something that I just hope to build on. And so I am really, really thankful and grateful for him. Although I will say I was cursing his name this morning at 7:30 when I was putting the letters on the marquee in the snow. I was like, Nick, come on, one more Sunday. You couldn't say one more Sunday, but okay. So I'm thankful for Nick Comiskey, the former lead guy here. Second thing I want to say is that I am super excited about my future with you all here at Christ Church Mission. And I want to just outline a couple reasons why. First, I love the city of Mission. I love this place. I live about 6 blocks from where I'm standing right now, and I've lived in that neighborhood for about 10 years. This is a special part of the city to me. You know, it's not like a prerequisite that you live in Mission to be a part of this community, but we have kind of unashamedly said, this is the place where we want to root our church. This is the focus of our missional life and initiatives are here in this city. And I just want to say, like, I come preloaded with a passion for that, you know? I love this part of the city. I love this part of Kansas City. I've been here a long time, and I'm excited to keep doing church here in there in that part of the city with you. Additionally, I love the people of Christ Church Mission. Some of you I've known for a very long time. I've been on staff at Christ Church Overland Park for like 13 years, and so if you preceded the launch of this church 2 years ago, I probably know you. Some of you I know very well. I've worked with in lots of different capacities. Others of you I got to know last year about this time when I served here for a couple of months, and so I got to know some of you then, and others I'm just getting to know now. There are still a lot of new faces and new stories. I've been, in the last 5 weeks, I've been meeting with people from Christ Church Mission, and I've loved hearing your stories and hearing what you love about this church, Christ Church Mission. I have heard some awesome tales. People who came to this church on their very first Sunday were invited to, like, multiple Bible studies and groups, and how that meant so much to them, and it's the reason why they stuck here at this church. I've heard stories from people who have gone through really difficult seasons and who said, it's the people of Christ Church Mission that helped support me and carry me through those really difficult seasons. I just think the community here at Christ Church Mission is something that is really special and should not be taken for granted. Additionally, connected to that, like, you all have been super cool to Jenny and I in these last 5 weeks. Like, I can't tell you how many people have come up to Jenny and I and said that you're excited for us to come be with you guys, and that, I assure you, means a lot to us. It's been such an encouragement to us, so thank you to all of you who have been so kind with us. Okay, I love Mission. I love the people of Christ Church Mission. I also love Lindsay. I love working with Lindsay. Yeah. Where is she? There she is. I think that Lindsay and I work together really well. It's just like so easy and natural for us, and so I'm really excited about that partnership. So funny, serendipitously, Lindsay and I the very first time we met was right down the road at Shawnee Mission North High School. It was 20 years ago. Both of us were in high school, but neither one of us went to that high school. We had been both recruited. We didn't know each other at all, but we had been recruited by a mutual friend to come shoot a video for this Christian camp that Lindsay and I were both kind of peripherally connected to. And so the video, he needed a like kind of captain of the football team type, you know? Obviously. So when he couldn't find that, he asked me if I would do it. And he cast Lindsay and I opposite one another as our first kind of dramatic leads debut. And I dug up that video. Yeah, and I thought it'd be fun to show just a couple of minutes. This is me and Lindsay 20 years ago.
So how was your summer?
It was great.
Really? I didn't see you around that much.
Yeah, I went to my dad's house in Florida. It's a little town on the coast. It's gorgeous down there, though.
My dad lives in Miami.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Do you see that? What is he doing with her? Ugh.
Andrea, I missed hanging out with you this summer.
Does the popular Caleb Anderson have a crush on a little church girl like me?
No. I mean, I don't know. It's just that all you said about God and him being so real to you, I just want to know more about that.
Seriously?
Yeah. I mean, you're beautiful and fun and so in tune with God. How could I not want that?
Are you okay with giving up your popularity?
I like being popular, but it just seems like there should be more than Dave and Cameron and all that fake crud. I just want to be, I don't know.
You mean be real and live a life of integrity?
Yeah, I guess. Do you think you could take me to church sometime?
And you're not just looking for a date?
Is church a date?
I'm just kidding, we'll call it church.
Okay, church then.
Well, I gotta go to class, so.
All right, well, I'll see you after school.
Okay.
Bye.
Just a little bit more. A tiny bit more.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Should be a pretty good game.
Yeah, it should be.
Hey, I'll catch you guys later.
Yeah.
Andrea, right? Hey, I don't think we've been properly introduced.
Dave, right?
Yeah, I guess I deserve that one. So,
did you need something?
What, can't a handsome guy just talk to a pretty girl?
Just face it, not every girl is gonna fall desperately in lust. I mean, in love with you.
That'll maybe take some girls a little bit longer to realize it.
Look, I don't care about how much you can bench press or that you're the captain of everything.
Look, maybe I'm not this evil jock I think I am. Why don't you give me a chance?
What's going on here?
Caleb, it's not what you think.
Yeah, man, just a kiss.
Just a kiss, huh? You're supposed to be my friend. Who do you think you are?
Hey, man, chill out. It ain't no big deal.
Yeah, my life's no big deal. Just a little game that Dave Richards can play with.
Look, man, I said chill out.
You said it yourself. You can have any girl you want. Why do you gotta take the one that I actually care about?
Caleb, your friend wouldn't leave me alone.
Yeah, man, I was just having a little fun. It's no big deal.
A little fun, huh? A little game to prove your manliness. Yeah, she'd be a great locker room story. You and the purest girl in the entire school.
Man. Ain't no fun if the homies can't have none.
You're not gonna talk about her like that!
Is she worth it, huh, man? Get your face kicked on, huh? Come on, come on. I'd have had her in a week. 10 days tops.
For once, I just wanted to be a nice guy with a nice girl. Come on, Andrea. I don't want to hang out with this guy anymore.
I don't know why you guys are laughing so much. Jeez. It's a serious role that I'm trying to play up there. Golly. Anyway, okay, so, yeah. So that was 20 years ago, and then Lindsay came to interview at Christchurch, like, so much later. It's fun. Okay, so I love Lindsay. Look, I could go on and on about the connections that I'm excited to build on here at Christchurch. We bought Nancy Pennington's minivan. I go to I went to college with a bunch of people from this church. Like, I helped push the gear from Sylvester Powell into this space a year ago. Anyway, I could go on. I'm excited about all the ways that I'm connected to this community. But I want to say one last thing, and then we have a sermon to get to. I've been thinking this week about Christchurch mission as an equation where all of those things add up. You know, like the city of mission, plus Lindsay, plus the foundation that Nick has laid, plus the gifts and leadership that I bring to the table, and like all of you guys. And I feel like that equation adds up to something great. Like when I look at that on a piece of paper, I'm like, man, this is awesome. But my prayer for Christchurch mission is that it is something more than an equation. That it's something more than, that God does more in us and through us than is just like the sum of our parts, okay? That's my prayer. I hope that you'll pray it with me, that the living God does something in us and through us, that he continues to change our lives and to reach people and to make his impact in the world through us that's bigger than just the sum of who we are together. Does that sound good? That's what I'm hoping for. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the text for today. As I mentioned, today is the first Sunday of Advent when we kind of look forward to, Advent means coming, you know, when we think and talk about the Lord's coming. And so that obviously is leading us to Christmas when Jesus was born, when he came for the first time. But Advent actually starts by thinking about when Jesus is going to come the second time, the second coming. Advent starts with the end in mind. Where is all of this headed? And I'm grateful for that emphasis that Advent impresses upon us, because it's something, the second coming is probably not something that a lot of us think about and like meditate upon. But I'm going to make the case this morning that it's important for Christians to not only believe in the second coming, but to long for it and to yearn for it. Let me first recognize that that is not where most of us are at this morning. Many of us are kind of uncomfortable with the idea of the second coming. When we think about people who love and cherish and think about the second coming, we think, many of us probably think of like religious fanatics, and we think, I don't want to be one of those people, so maybe I can just push this second coming aside. Now, we love the first coming, don't we? We love the first coming of Jesus, right? The star in the sky and the baby in the manger and peace on earth and goodwill to men, you know. That we can get behind. That we can build a holiday around. But the second coming is kind of a different story altogether. In the second coming, it's not a star in the sky. It's like stars falling from the sky. It's not a baby in a manger. It's a God of power coming on a cloud. It's not peace on earth, but the distress of nations, this text tells us. It's not angels singing, but people terrified. No wonder we struggle with the second coming. However, I think it's really important. I'll tell you why. First and foremost, the second coming is listed over, or is referenced in some way, over 300 times in the New Testament. That's a lot. And throughout church history, the church has really held on to this doctrine of the second coming. We, as a regular part of our worship, say the creed, one of the creeds. Like today, we'll say the Apostles' Creed together after the sermon. That creed was finalized in 390 AD, and in it we say that the Lord will come again to judge the living and the dead. So for 2,000 years, the church has believed that that is an important doctrine. The second coming is not some kind of deep pull, kind of an optional thing that you can choose to believe as a Christian. It's mainstream for Jesus, and it's mainstream for the church. But rather than try to get you excited about it by telling you that Jesus loves it and that the church loves it, I'm going to try to tell you a little bit about why I think the second coming is good news for Christians. Good news for them to believe and good news for them to treasure. So three short questions this morning. What is coming? What does it mean? And how can we prepare? What's coming? What does it mean? And can we prepare? Let's start with what's coming, and I'm just going to reread some of those verses that Trish read from the gospel reading, starting in verse 25. There will be signs in the sun, moon, and stars. On the earth, nations will be in anguish and perplexity at the roaring and tossing of the sea. People will faint from terror, apprehensive of what is coming on the world, for the heavenly bodies will be shaken. At that time, they will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. When these things begin to take place, stand up and lift up your heads, because your redemption is drawing near. Jesus Christ, who was born a human being, who lived, was crucified, died, buried, rose, and then ascended into heaven, is coming back one day. Now, how literally are we supposed to take the description that we find here in this text? It's hard to say. When Jesus says that the stars and moon will tremble, like, does he mean that literally, or is he referring to more like in our society and culture, you know, like world leaders and markets and institutions will shake? I don't know the answer to that question. What about the timing? You know, when is this all going to happen? There are a few really difficult parts of that to discern from this passage, and I won't try to explain them because it would take a long time this morning, but here's what I want to say about the timing. When I read the text, what I hear Jesus saying is that it's more important that you prepare yourself than you try to calculate when exactly the second coming is going to happen. A mistake that the American church has sometimes made. So will this second coming happen in our lifetime, or will we first die and then witness or experience this event from kind of another angle? I don't know. Who knows? But what we can be sure of is this, that Jesus Christ, called here the Son of Man, will return to earth no longer meek and mild, but with power and glory. A key word here in this passage is cloud. You know, it says that Jesus will return with a cloud or in a cloud, and that word means something very specific to Jesus' listeners. Some of you might know that in the book of Exodus, when the people of God were delivered from slavery in Egypt by the power of God and they were led to the promised land, the thing that led them through the wilderness was a cloud. A cloud. And in that cloud dwelt the very presence of God. So that cloud not only like directed them and guided them, it was near to them and served as a security and safety for them, assuring them every day that the presence of God was with them. So for Jesus to say that he's coming back riding on a cloud, so to speak, he's saying that one day he will come back, but not just him. He's coming and he's bringing with him the glory of God, the very presence of God in a cloud. When I return, he says, the glory and presence of God will come and fill the entire earth, and it will change everything. With that cloud, with the presence of God, will come an end to violence and hunger and poverty and division and pain and sickness and death and all forms of brokenness. The restoration and renewal of the entire earth will come. Thanks be to God. Now, many of you are probably experiencing things in life that make you long for the second coming of Jesus, long for that experience at least, for all things to be made right, for this world to be restored, and for the brokenness to be healed. Sometimes the pain and brokenness of our lives causes us to cry out and long for the day when everything will be made right. And there's a line in this passage that stuck out to me in a new way this week when I was reading the passage. It says this, "Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away." Initially, I kind of circled that line as, what does that mean? And I still can't tell you, like, literally what the heaven and earth will pass away part, but here's what I'll say. I think it's no accident that Jesus, in the middle of this passage, is saying, my words, this message about my second coming will not pass away. It is reliable. It's more dependable than the very heavens and earth. The fact that I am coming back to make all things new and make all things right, do not be mistaken. It's coming. Jesus knows that there will be times when all of us despair and when we say the pain of this world is too much, when we doubt that he actually ever will return, when we say he's already been gone so long, 2,000 years. When is he coming back? Maybe we misunderstood. Maybe he has forgotten us. Maybe he has forgotten me. If that is you this morning, Jesus is saying, listen, my words will not pass away. I will come back to restore all the brokenness in the world and in your life. So that's what's coming. What does it mean? Well, in order for God to make all things right, to restore the world to its perfect goodness that he desired, that he designed, there needs to be judgment. How can he deal with the injustice and violence and brokenness of our world without dealing with our hearts? You know, sin and evil and brokenness don't just exist as like disembodied forces in the world. They take root. They start here. They flow from our hearts. And so in order to make things right, Jesus has to deal with what's wrong in our hearts. He can't just show up and say, hey, it's okay now. He has to deal with what's wrong. So here's the thing from this passage. It's obvious to us in our simple reading of the text that there are different kinds of responses to that coming judgment. For some, it will mean anguish and perplexity and terror and apprehension. And yet Jesus seems to say that there's another possible response to God's coming judgment, one where we can stand in confidence and hold our heads up. What is the difference? What's the difference between those two responses, terror and confidence? Will the dividing line go between the moral and the immoral? Is Jesus coming to judge the right from the wrong, the perpetrators from the victims, the haves from the have-nots? I want to be careful here. It's not as if those things are completely unimportant. You know, for example, in Matthew 25, Jesus says, how you treat the least of these is a factor on judgment day. But the truth is far more scandalous than moral versus immoral. The difference on judgment day between cowering in terror and standing in confidence is what Jesus calls in this passage redemption. Your redemption is drawing near. So stand up and hold your head up high. On the day of judgment, none of us, no one on earth will be moral enough to get a pass. No one will be innocent enough. The only thing that can give us courage to stand with heads held high on that day is redemption. The truth that aligning yourself with the grace and love of Jesus is your only hope. It's what matters most. Jesus already suffered judgment on the cross, and he suffered it for anyone who would put their hope and their trust in him. So when you give your life to him, you can stand in confidence, knowing that the price for your judgment has already been paid. Now, to be sure, once you've experienced that redemption, you will be melted by that love and grace. You will begin to stand for victims rather than ignore them. You will more selflessly become a have-not rather than a have. And you will work for restoration rather than accepting and experiencing brokenness. But it starts first with redemption. Okay, last question. What can we do to prepare for that second coming? Obviously, the very best thing that you can do is put your hope and trust in Jesus Christ and let the power of Jesus' grace move your heart. You know, we could let this Advent season, we call it the Christmas season, be marked by more than just happiness and full stomachs, you know? This season, if we choose so, could be marked by real joy and celebration in what Jesus has done for us. What if this Advent season was a season that you looked back on, you know, Advent 2018 or whatever, as this a season where you that was marked by real spiritual growth for you, marked by scripture and prayer and marked by celebrating what God has done for you? That would be a great way to prepare for Jesus' second coming. But there's one more thing. I started earlier in this message, maybe not started, but earlier in this message, I said something about there are those of you that are longing, that find yourselves this morning even, longing for the world to be made right, longing for that restoration of the world. Some of you are in that place, but others of you are not. Probably many of us are not. You know, I was thinking a little bit, kind of reflecting this week on why don't I long more for Jesus's coming, his second coming. I think one of the reasons is because sometimes life feels pretty good here and now. Some of us are so comfortable that we don't long for Jesus' second coming. But let me tell you this. There are people in our city, in this church, in our city, around the world, who don't need to be told to long for Jesus' second coming. They are longing for it because they are desperate. Life is so hard. They are suffering physically, economically, spiritually, relationally, emotionally. They're suffering so profoundly that their hearts are crying out for God's return. So what I want to say is, if you want another tip to how to prepare for Jesus' second coming, align yourself with someone like that. Find someone in your life or in the world who is desperate for Jesus' second coming. Spend time with that person. Pray for that person. Link yourself up to someone who is hungry for Jesus' second coming. Ground yourself in compassion for someone who's really suffering. That will help jumpstart your desire for the coming of the glory of God in the world and in our lives. Amen.